Okay, this is the 9/11 truth. The 9/11 another deep state crime teleconference for October 28th, 2015. Ken Freeland facilitating. Craig McKee, beautiful secretary, will lead the role and make sure we know who's with us before we proceed. Go ahead, Craig.
Okay, I'll read the list I have, and then if anybody was left off. Did someone just join?
Yeah, hi, this is Sheila.
Oh, hi, Sheila.
Hey, welcome back, Sheila.
Thank you.
Okay, well, yeah.
The Pentagon is an interest of mine, so I didn't want to miss this one.
Right. So, okay, so I have, besides myself, Barry Zwicker, Lynn Bradbury, Ken Freeland, Paul Zaremka, Ned Delaney, Dan Hennen, Pat McGuire, Dwayne Deep, Dick Attlee, Dave Schlesinger, Adam Syed, James Hufford, Hamulk, Barton Bruce, and Sheila Casey.
You realize McGuire's first name is Cat, as in Catherine, not Pat, as in Patrick or Patricia.
Oh, yes. No, Cat. I said Cat. Yeah, I knew that. Thanks. So, did I get everybody?
All right. Well, we've got a good house full tonight, so we're ready to roll. And the first item on the agenda is always to review the minutes. We did note two people whose names were omitted from the previous teleconference, and Craig will add those in the 5 minutes. Is there any other amendments for the minutes, other than correcting Dick's name from David to Dick? Hearing none, then we'll take the minutes as otherwise approved, and move on to approval of tonight's draft agenda. This is circulated, and does anybody have anything to add or amend in the minutes? The draft minutes. Okay, hearing no suggestions, then we'll take the draft, we'll drop the draft agenda for tonight's piece, and begin with our first item, which is the report on the first annual Lee Harvey Oswald conference, which Kat McGuire has brought to us. Go ahead, Kat.
Okay, can you hear me all right?
Yep.
Very well.
Okay, and how much time do I have, please?
You could take up to 15 minutes on your own, 15 to 20 minutes, and then we want to reserve at least 10 minutes for, you know, questions and answers and discussion if there's any.
Okay.
Can I cut in for a second? There's a background noise. Someone's got noise in their room. If they would please push *6 to mute so that the background noise doesn't come in, they'll still be able to hear it. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Yes, very important. Whoever has that room background noise going on, *6, please press *6. And you won't all have to hear it, and then you can press *6 again when you're ready to speak, okay? We're still hearing it. Someone's got a background conversation going on. *6. Get that to you. All right. Thank you for reading it, and go ahead, Kat.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Pat McGuire. I live in New York City, and I've been interested in the JFK assassination for several years. I went to both conferences for the 50th anniversary that were in Dallas, and there was what's called a first annual Oswald conference in New Orleans, October 16th through 18th, that I attended, and I'm really glad I did. I liked it very much. There were about 200 people there at an airport hotel outside of the New Orleans airport. And it was almost a totally white audience, mostly older people and mostly men. There were a lot of locals. There were some people from Georgia and Texas. I raised eyebrows being all the way from New York City. On by Chris Milligan, who is the publisher of Fine Day, and their mandate is to publish books that nobody else will. I believe possibly Judith Barry Baker was also to help produce it, but I'm not totally sure. On the website now, when it says who produced it, it says information forthcoming or something. And That's because there's a lot of controversy over Judy Baker, which I'll get to. But in any event, they are putting on a second one with many of the same people in Dallas this November, and that is November 20th through 22nd. And you can go to that website if you're interested in going to that conference, www.jfkconference.com. And that one, Judy Baker, is listed as a co-producer with Chris Milligan of Trying Day Books. Some of the speakers that were there, besides Judith Berry herself, was Joan Mellon, Jim Mars, Russ Baker, Ed Haslam, Roger Stone, and some local people spoke, perspective, get some dorms to him. So that's pretty much it. And a few sundry others, Ed Petro and a few others. My main reason that I wanted to go is first and foremost to hear Ed Haslam. He has written a book called Dr. Mary's Monkey. And it's a very fascinating book. If you haven't heard it, I was hoping that maybe we could do a study group in this group with that book. Basically, he brings together the cancer virus that was from monkeys that got into the polio vaccine, and that there is an epidemic that was supposed to happen 30 years later. This happened in the 50s, and there was a rogue monkey virus that got into the polio vaccines, and they knew about it, and they were trying to figure out, but they never told the public, and people have never heard of it because they've never told the public. And so he has written a book about that, and also what's so fascinating about it is those who were working on that cancer virus in New Orleans, they were simultaneously trying to figure out the cure and still keep it covered up. They were simultaneously trying to figure out how to put together a cancer shot for Castro. And so those involved in David Berry, Lee Harvey Oswald, and Judith Berry Baker. So it sounds like this sensational kind of account. You've got to be kidding. And I wanted to go to find out, can I believe this man? What was he like? And then the second major reason I wanted to go was to see Judith Berry Baker, because she has written a book called Lee and Me. And she claims that she and Lee fell deeply in love, and that she knows him, every inch of him, and nobody will believe her. She's fairly dissed by the research community, the JFK research community. In large part because her style, she's guileless. She just says anything that comes to her mind, and when she came out, I'm not sure exactly when she came out, but when she did reveal this intense relationship she had over the summer of 1963 with Lee Harvey Oswald, people didn't believe her because she was saying, well, this is wrong and that's wrong. And they're like, well, who are you? And she doesn't present herself in the most professional manner, but she pretty much is, this is undisputable, she was a scientist, and she did some amazing discoveries for the cancer virus, and she was on her way to becoming a renowned, potentially cancer doctor herself. And then the whole Lee Harvey Oswald thing happened with her, and she got kind of banished as a result of that. And so it's very controversial, and I wanted to see, can I trust her? What's going on with her? So let me kind of start with Judy. And she took, in the first talk that she had, she disputed John Armstrong's book, A man named John Armstrong has a book out saying that it's called Harvey and Lee, and he claims that there is a double Lee Harvey Oswald. And it's a very intense book. He spent over 10 years researching it, and Judy is not in it at all. And she said that he called her up, he contacted her early on, and he asked her if she was pregnant in 1963 because she was impersonating Marina. Lee Harvey Oswald was in New Orleans then when he was seeing her, but Marina was still living in Dallas. And Judy was kind of impersonating her. And Armstrong said, how could you have impersonated Marina? And Judy said, well, she stopped impersonating Marina after Marina came to New Orleans. But Armstrong figured, well, you're not a viable source, and I'm not going to use you. So he has excised her existence, as have many others. Judy is highly committed to exonerating Lee's name. He was the love of her life, and she claims that she was of his. And so much of the work she's doing is to validate the man that she knew, and she has a lot of details. As well as, I think, uninvisibilize herself. And she brought a tremendous amount of documentation to prove herself. She's trying to say, I knew this man, I know a lot, but a lot of what she says kind of contradicts what the research community says. It's a very touch and go, and because she kind of co-produced this, she has been, the whole conference was somewhat dissed, which I didn't think was very professional. That was done on Black Ops Radio, the leading JFK online community. So what I would really like to see is some kind of panel debate. If you researchers don't believe her, then let her put her documentation forward and debate with her. Look at her, what she has to say. Somebody like Joan Mellon doesn't believe her, and Joan says that in the 25 years that she's investigated hundreds of people, nobody once saw or mentioned Judy Berry Baker. But then Judy's whole role at that time, she was only like 19, was meant to be under the radar so that she could do her work. They were doing all this rogue, top secret kind of work that centered around killing Castro and trying to find this cure to get rid of the monkey virus out of the polio vaccine that nobody was supposed to know about. So I had an offline conversation with Judy, and one of the things that they say about her book is that it is there's so much dialogue in there. How could she have so much dialogue? Well, she claims she has a photographic memory. I'm like, well, photographic, that's visual. And she said, well, yes, but she kept a diary as well that supposedly it got destroyed. And then I also asked her, well, why haven't you been suicided? And she's just she's very emotional about this. Like when she mentions Lee's name, sometimes it's like she's going to cry. She's a very emotional, kind of spiritual, sort of artistic kind of person. And also, as well, very scientific. She was a bona fide scientist. But she can't live in the United States. She's been in four car wrecks. They cut her brake line once. And she can't even see very well anymore from the injury. She lives in Europe, and she stays at different places. And I'm like, oh, you house it? She goes, no. She moves around among friends, and she has to be careful. She was supposed to visit friends in London, and they got over 50 calls from somebody saying, how do you know her? What is her intention? How long is she staying here? So I said, well, you must have an awful time flying. Aren't you on a no-fly list? She said, no, that would be too obvious. So anyway, long story short, I found it hard not to believe her, but yet I respect the research community that hadn't found anything about her, and I'd really like to see a panel come forward. I think she needs to be authenticated or not. Either out her as some kind of strange personality who is making up that she knew and loved Lee Harvey Oswald, or look at her documentation and say something. So next, I'd like to talk about Ed Haslam and this incredible book he wrote. Judy is part of it. But Ed is from New Orleans, and his father knew Mary Sherman. As a child, he sat on Mary Sherman's lap. Mary Sherman was one of the premier doctors who knew all about cancer and viruses, and she was murdered in a still unsolved case, in a grisly, ugly, brutal murder. Her whole arm was incinerated, and then she was, like, burned in her bed, but there were, like, 5 knife wounds, one through the heart, and it was determined that the fire wasn't in the bed, so where was it? Where was she moved from? Very grisly murder. And she was very involved with the whole community of anti-communists, such as Dr. Ochsner, who was did all of this cancer research. He was like sort of like the head of Tulane Medical, very prominent guy, extreme anti-communist, and a CIA asset. His son later said that he actually did work with the CIA. And so there's this whole CIA connection with Lee Harvey Oswald was working with him, and they brought Judy Baker in. And they were trying to figure out how to get rid of the monkey virus, but at the same time, there was all this planning for what was going to come down in a couple months. And Ed Haslam's book is astounding. He owns up that it's not complete. He's hoping his book will bring people out who have more to say. And also, I wish the JFK researcher community would deal with this book. I think it's so far out of their comfort zone that they don't know what to do with it. It's like monkey virus, Lee Harvey Oswald. What are you talking about? Well, read the book and have the man on, and if you don't believe what he says, say something. I asked one of the leading researchers, Jim DiEugenio, at a conference last year in Bethesda, what he thought of Dr. Mary's Monkey, because it's just so extraordinary. It's an incredible book, just on the face of what it's saying, and then it's true. It even has it, but it's true. And Jim DiEugenio said he thinks there's something there, and he had actually written a review of it. And so I would really like more people to talk about it, and I realized that he was giving his very sound, lucid presentation. Also, I found him to be a lovely man, a very professional man, sincere. I really like him a lot. Judy is a little quirky because she just blathers up anything that comes to her mind, but Ed is a very strong, solid man who knows his stuff and is very sincere. And he said Judy is 100% legit. She just doesn't have very good PR manners and knows how to do things right. But I realized that I really have to bring Ed Haslam to New York to give a lecture. And that is my goal. I intend to do it in the fall of 2016. He agreed to do it. We have a lot to discuss. But I think what he has to say is extremely important and touches a lot of different things. The other person that I would like to touch, two other people, as quickly as I can. I think I have 5 more minutes. Is that correct?
Pretty close, yeah.
Russ Baker was down there. He's been down in New Orleans for a while. Russ Baker with Who, What, Why. He wrote the renowned book On the Bushes, Family of Secrets. And now he is, as he quote-unquote said himself, he is obsessed with JFK. He decided to write a book about JFK, and now he's in New Orleans, and his whole talk was on New Orleans, the security state. And there are a lot of tangential people in New Orleans. Obviously, you've got Garrison, but all of these people, Clay Shaw, David Ferry, but he was looking even deeper than that. People who I hadn't heard of, Rudolf Peck, who was the chairman of the Board of International House, George Felix, richest man in America at one time. All these people are kind of behind the scenes, but involved in all this plotting. And so that is what Russ Baker is doing right now, and where I think some extreme promise goes is with Permindex, where Clay Shaw worked, and who were those paymasters at Permindex. And there's a book called Final Judgment by Michael Collins Piper that is very interesting, and no one would touch it. Russ would not, because I asked about what he thought of that book, and he completely ignored me, because it gets to some very interesting, when you go up the chain, higher up than the people in New Orleans, even higher up than the CIA, what's going on. And so that is what I'm looking at now is, who's really, clearly the CIA project managed this, no two ways about it. But who were their paymasters? They did it at the behest of the 1% of the 1%, but who exactly is that? And I don't have a stake in the ground on Final Judgment yet. I'm still in the process of reading through it and other materials, but I think that's a promising lead. And then I'd like to talk about Roger Stone. I don't know if you all know who Roger Stone is. He has been a longtime Republican operative, consultant sort of thing. He was with Richard Nixon for many years. He actually has a tattoo of Richard Nixon on his back. And he has come out during the 50s. He had the big book on LBJ. Because what they realize now is that nobody really believes Oswald was the lone gunman. But as Lisa Pease, another researcher, says, the theory, the ABC theory, anybody but the CIA. So they had to put out a limited hangout of somebody else out there. So LBJ did it. That's the best thing, anybody but the CIA. So regardless that this research is community has been toiling for over 30 years, some 40, 50 years. Were any of them interviewed during the 50th anniversary? No. Who, not of the lone gunman, who got a lot of play? Roger Stone. And he's out there with a new book. During the 50th, he had his LBJ Did It book. Well, come on. But now he's got a book. He started touting his current book. And his current book is Clinton, The Clintons' War on Women, that both Hillary and Bill are against women. And so he had some gutter stuff about that. Yeah, we know Bill rapes women or whatever. But Hillary supposedly hired private detectives to trash the victims. Well, I'm no fan of Hillary, trust me. But he's got another book on Jeb. So that's his whole thing. There's a tox on both of them. The two parties are actually one party. The first thing he said when he came out is, this is Roger Stone, your classic dirty trickster. He said, all we really seek is the truth. So I'm like, truth or talk, okay. So then he proceeds to talk about his Clinton book, and then he said about Jeb Bush, and it's music to everybody's ears. What's he talking about, Jeb Bush? He brings up Prescott Bush was a Nazi. He brings up all manner of Bush scandalous stuff. And people, I loved it. It's like, yeah, go after both the Bushes and the Clintons. They're awful people. But and so nobody supports them. But interspersed with that, he puts in a lot of lies and mistruths. He's a classic psyop guy. And what he describes himself is, he said he, quote unquote, ran the recount in Florida. And then he claims it was his biggest regret. And so he gets the people who were trying to say that the CIA did. He goes, they put the one stake in the ground. It was all of them. But then he had this huge visual billboard thing that he brought with him. No one else had that. That it was LBJ, which to me is like completely undermining most of the JFK research community who knows, most of them know it was the CIA on some level. For who, that remains to be seen, but certainly the CIA was the mastermind of it. And so when it came time for questions and answers, I said, you say everyone else put the single stake in the ground, but you did the same thing with LBJ. You end up basically saying it was his. And then I said how during the 50th, he got all of that play. And, you know, what they were looking for was somebody to do the LBJ unit series. Well, that brings us to you, Mr. Stone, I said. And then I was damned if he was going to leave it as I ran the recount. I said, excuse me, you brought in fake demonstrators and orchestrated a riot over Chaz, resulting in the recount being taken out of local hands and into the Supreme Court, which turned into a judicial coup d'etat. Thank you very much for that, Mr. Stone. And so now you're here again on this scene, this time with the LBJ did it distraction. Isn't this just another one of your dirty trick psyops that has been a hallmark of your entire career? And then came back at me, he got angry, and he said, I am saying all of everybody did. And I'm like, no, you put a stake in the ground with LBJ. You should see that I took a picture of his big billboard. And so anyway, I was just saying that this is just another one of his dirty tricks, and that he is a professional, very professional, very slick. He's a dazzler. He will dazzle you when you talk. But basically, he's a very professional, dazzling, sleazy demagogue. And anybody who's trying to rehabilitate Nixon's name and call him a great statesman and a man of peace, which is what he tried to slip into that audience as he trashed Bill and Hillary and Jeb, yeah, we're against them. But you slipped in too many lies, you silver-tongued devil. So that was, it created quite a stir, and everybody was like, who is this? So people were looking at my name tag. And I think my time is out. I can't go into any more questions.
Great. Okay. Thanks so much, Kat. That almost like me in there. That was a very, very thorough recounting. Who would like to be on the set to make a comment or ask a question?
Well, Barry here in Toronto.
Barry, hang on. Who else besides Barry?
Dan Hennon.
Sorry?
Who? Dan Hennon. Okay, who else?
Dave Schlesinger.
Dave, who else?
Lisa
Vino. I'm sorry? Who else? I got Barry, Dan, and Dave. Anybody else? Okay, I'll put myself flat. Go ahead, Barry.
Okay, it's just a simple, seemingly simple question to Kat. From what I have heard, LBJ was deeply involved, and there's quite a bit of literature about the meeting at the oil millionaire's house the night before the execution of JFK, and JFK allegedly told his lover, that Kennedy's not going to bother us anymore. There was extremely bad blood
LBJ told his lover, not Kennedy. LBJ told his lover.
Okay. So anyway, I'm not trying to say anything definitive. I'm just asking Kat, to what extent do you think there is something to the involvement of LBJ?
Just as all the researchers say, LBJ was absolutely involved. It could not have happened without him. More for the cover-up than anything else. He was the one who set up the Warren Commission and hoodwinked Warren to come in, even though it was really Alan Dulles who ran it. He was an absolute enabler who was there, but I do not believe he masterminded it. I don't think he had the full forces to mastermind all these people who had to work in compartmentalized mode. You've got the Alpha 66 Cubans, you've got the Mafia, you've got CIA, you've got the Secret Service, you've got the FBI. All of them are doing this. I don't believe LBJ would ever, he was a powerful person. I don't believe he had all that. And more so, two things. One, after he was elected, he ended up stepping down. Well, you don't, like, kill somebody if you're just going to step down then at some point. And the main one, and the one that I have said to Roger Stone, is that he didn't have years after. We're talking 50 years later now, and they're still withholding evidence. LBJ did not have the forum, the platform to do that. He didn't have the institution. There aren't people still kind of covering up for him, as opposed to a whole organization, such as the FBI in concert with the CIA, the whole national security state that has the ability to keep records covered up, and possibly suicide, the mysteriously murder up to supposedly 100 witnesses. Then finally, as to the meeting at Merkinson's house in Texas that LBJ and supposedly a lot of bigwigs were at, I am not sure that that really happened, or even if it did, that LBJ said that, because his girlfriend, Madeline Brown, I believe Brown is her last name, is, there are people who say she's just a liar. She's lied at everything. Well, that's doing like Judy Baker again. Supposedly she has a child by LBJ. I heard William Pepper say once that Madeline is my friend, so I'm surprised that many of the researchers find it very suspect that the meeting took place, and even if it did, that he ever said that to her, because that's the only way that that kind of came out, is through her.
Okay. Well, sort of an additional, just a quick additional question to you, Kat. What motive would she have to say such a thing? What did she have to gain, and what did she have to lose by simply lying about something like that?
Well, you get a lot of attention when you're talking about things like that. Also, maybe she wanted to make sure her son was taken care of. I don't know that little rabbit hole there all of that much. She maybe was saying the truth. I don't really know. But even if he was there and they said, I don't think he fully masterminded. Let's say the party was there, LBJ was there, he did say we're going to get that bastard. I still don't think he has the entire the infrastructure at his behest that was required to pull off something, a murder that big, and then, as they say, the murder's easy, it's the cover-up that's hard. I don't think he would have had that much at his disposal to have done that.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Okay. Dan, you're next. I just have three things for Kat. Number one, I'd like to be in that group. Number two, I also heavily recommend that book, Mary Carey and the Monkey Virus. The second book is called Dr. Mary's Monkey. Unbelievable. As I'll reiterate what Kat said earlier, you almost have to read that book in 30-minute increments to be able to digest the amount of information that's in that book. The third thing is Judith Barry Baker is legit, good to go. I would follow. There's a big community out there that just credit her, so watch out for those types. And Roger Stone, just deal with him with a grain of salt. He's got some truth hidden in there in all of his books, with a lot of misinformation as well. So I would just steer clear of his stuff. But yes, LPJ was heavily involved. Over.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Dave, you're next? Thanks. First, I have to quickly note, Kat, that LBJ didn't step down right after he assumed the presidency. He won the 64 election and did not run again after that. So, you know, the 4 years or whatever is long enough for someone to conceivably decide to change their direction. And he did die soon after leaving office, so, you know, his health could have been affected, could have been one of the reasons he didn't. I mean, basically, he probably didn't run again because the Vietnam War was a failure. My question is, and I'm so sorry, I'm not that knowledgeable about JFK stuff. What is the significance, why would any of the bulk of the researchers be against Baker? Is there something she's saying that is threatening to them, or is it just a personal thing?
I think some of it is personal. She wasn't very astute about when she finally came out, she didn't speak for a long time. I think she was very afraid. And when she did come out, she just said, this is wrong, and this is wrong, and they got this wrong and that wrong. And these people have been involved in this space for many years, and here out of the blue, this woman is coming. And even as she speaks, she's kind of blithering. She just says whatever at the top of her mind, just says it. And she is not... she's not dumb, but she's just not strategic and not very poised. And so part of the threat does exist. A, how could you have done all this research found about her? Somebody I knew asked, Joan Nelson, if you've done over 25 years of research and asked hundreds of people, so ever heard of her? So what does that mean about your research capabilities? Well, on others, she has what she claims is a lot of documentation that, like written documentation, that would prove other people's analysis wrong, especially John Armstrong, for example, things that she says would obviate his theory of to Oswald, but not just him, other people as well. She's saying things that go against what has some leading researchers have said is almost factual. Well, who really knows? And now she's come out of left field. So I just really think that she deserves a forum, like on Black Ops Radio, with a panel or something where it's like, okay, you're saying this. So that's really fun.
Aren't there pictures in the book of that Dr. Ochsner when she's really young? I mean, I think he recruited her. She was a really smart, like, 17-year-old.
Oh, she totally was.
I mean, she proved that she was with him, that she was working with him.
Right, so much of her documentation is unassailable. And so now that she was silenced, because basically, she was in the car when they went to that mental hospital where they were going to test the virus on a inmate from Angola. And Lee Harvey Oswald was there. I think that was when Clay Shaw drove them up there. And so when she was so appalled what they were doing, that they were actually, because he had been working with all these mice in David Berry's apartment, tons of mice, and Lee Harvey Oswald had to dissect the mice and got sick. When they went upstate, it was like Clinton Hospital or something. I can't remember the exact hospital name, but they had to go upstate up by Baton Rouge. And that's when she realized that they were using the guinea pig. They were just live testing on this prisoner from Angola. She was appalled, and she came back and she confronted Dr. Ochsner, and he banished her completely. And she was banished back to Florida. Meanwhile, Lee was sent to Dallas to continue with what they had already set him up for, and her whole life was destroyed as a result. She never got to do medical career, and it just kind of surviving, went undercover, just didn't come out at all. And then I think, I'm not sure exactly when, but within the last 10 years at least, she came out and wrote this book and is now talking about it. And one thing that he was actually a hero trying to help.
Thanks. Kat, my question to you is this. I read Dr. Mary's Monkey. This is Ken. I read Dr. Mary's Monkey, and my recollection is that the virus that they were concerned would proliferate in a generation was a carcinogenic sort of virus, that it was actually going to produce a spate of cancers. Isn't that correct?
That's exactly it. They were afraid that they knew that monkey virus was in there, and they were and they saw that it was a time bomb, supposedly going to release like 30 years later, and that there was an epidemic of cancer that could be released. And indeed, we have seen an epidemic of cancer. And I did a screenshot of it. The Center for Disease Control, at one time, someone who obviously didn't know what they were doing, put up there admitting that there was a cancer, a monkey cancer virus, I think it's called S40, in the polio vaccine, and then it was immediately taken down. But somebody had the wherewithal in the Wayback Machine to get that screenshot, and so I made sure I got it, too. And I showed it to Ed Hatch because that's exactly right. They know that they did it. And Nixon was deeply involved with this, too. He knew about it. So there was just a lot of top-secret stuff going on, and Judy was underage, and yet she was this brilliant high school researcher who was working with the mice that she had and doing stuff that nobody at the top research institutions in the country was doing. She was being able to replicate really fast cancer viruses. And so they snarfed her up, and she ended up with this powerful Dr. Ochsner, who was seriously also the leading anti-communist.
All right, well, I just wanted to make a point about that the virus was actually supposed to produce cancer, so that was their big fear, which made it tangential to their whole cancer research project. Okay, I think we've got to cut it off here because we're way over time, but Kat, thank you so much for that really excellent and thorough recounting of that conference, and hopefully if you get anywhere with the one researcher to have him there in New York, you'll let us know about that for people who are nearby to be able to take advantage of that, too, right?
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, our next item on the agenda, this is a part two, in a way, of a presentation by Craig McKee. It started last week when he reviewed Chandler's Oakland 9/11 Film Festival presentation on the Pentagon, and this week he's going to bring us up to speed on Ken Jenkins' intro to that and his own remarks and their implications. So go ahead, Craig.
Okay, thanks. Before I start, did somebody else join the call about 10 minutes ago that I don't have written down? Nope. Okay, I thought I heard that, whatever. Okay, so yeah, last month I did a presentation about David Chandler's talk on the Pentagon.
Excuse me, just a second, Craig.
Yeah.
Somebody with the number 4, beginning with 415, who's that? Who's on the call with the number beginning with 415?
I think it would probably be, oh, it's Barton speaking. I think it's probably Hamook.
Probably who?
It may be Hamook. Oh, no, wait a minute. He's 4, that's Houston, isn't it?
No, 415.
I think that's Bay Area.
415 is the one who just came on 10 minutes ago, but it's not, has not identified themselves. And I got to really ask that person, whoever's number four, beginning 415-342, please identify yourself or we're going to have to drop you from the call. It's only one. Only twice. All right, you'll have to come back on and identify yourself if you want to be part of the call. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay, yeah, as I was saying, I did this talk, this thing looking at David Chandler's talk last month, and basically the gist of that was that virtually all of his talk was in support of the official story, or most of the official story, of what happened at the Pentagon. So I want to follow that up by looking at Ken Jenkins' contribution, which came in the form of a live introduction to a 30-minute section of a film that he's working on, also on the Pentagon. I found his talk significant in terms of the ongoing efforts by this small group of researchers to push most of the official story and undermine the evidence that we have that no large plane impact took place at the Pentagon on 9/11. And this group includes, besides Jenkins and Chandler, people like Frank Legg, Jonathan Cole, John Wyndham, Jim Hoffman, Victoria Ashley, and a few others. There were a number of troubling aspects to the talk. First, Jenkins did his best to give the impression that the same scientists who established controlled demolition as the dominant position of the truth movement have now turned their attention, as he said, to the unanswered questions about the Pentagon, kind of implying that it's the A&E brain trust that has now moved over to this other topic. In fact, the group has now spent several years trying to convince us that most of the evidence that challenges the official story is wrong, and that in most ways the official story is correct. They do this by using the same language that debunkers use. And what Ken did in this talk is he links the credibility that AE-9/11 Truth has achieved to his minority theory, I would call it, that the government is telling us the truth about almost everything related to the Pentagon. And here's a quote from his talk. He says, "There now exists a growing body of scholarly papers, websites, and group efforts utilizing the scientific method to examine these Pentagon questions, and they have converged on a central thesis that challenges some of our persistent beliefs within the movement." Now, there's a lot of very interesting language in that comment, which I find misleading and kind of slippery, actually. The growing body of papers that he refers to is simply the same people, the same small group of people just writing more papers. It's not a growing group of people writing papers. He implies that more and more researchers are coming over to this point of view, as I said, which isn't true. He also refers to positions other than his and Chandler's as representing diverging, this is in quotation marks, diverging and mutually contradictory theories. Well, this is not true either. I mean, sure, there are plenty of, there are lots of different theories, there are missile theories and things like this, which one could call mutually contradictory. But the real issue is not that. It's between people who believe that a plane did crash, as the government says, and people who do not believe that. At least that's how I see it. So he characterizes those who don't believe in an impacted place as having persistent beliefs. So in other words, he and his group represent science and scholarship, whereas people who don't agree with him have beliefs, which I have a problem with that. So these papers mention the scientific method repeatedly as if to sort of plant the seed in our minds that they represent a scientific approach and others who don't agree with them do not. In fact, Jenkins mentioned it four times in his six-minute introduction, which feels like spin to me. The group is trying to create an image that their position is being linked to the mainstream of the movement, which I don't agree with. Chandler and Cole, in their joint statement that they did in 2011, said that the Pentagon is a dead end for research and that it should be abandoned. And yet, though the two of them and the rest of their group have spent the time ever since basically working on the Pentagon and trying to convince the movement that a plane did crash. And let's see, incidentally, the fact that these researchers are all working together, despite the fact that they kind of leave the impression that they just kind of happen to agree with each other, was confirmed when Chandler announced just earlier in the month that seven of the group's members, I call them a group, but seven of them, have co-authored a new paper which seeks to challenge Barbara Honegger's positions on the Pentagon. And again, it's interesting to me that they're focusing on anybody who opposes the official story rather than opposing the official story itself or themselves. Now, Jenkins' efforts to push his Pentagon position go beyond what he has done in public. He convinced his group, which is the Northern California 9/11 Truth Alliance, to postpone showing Honegger's video behind the smoke curtain for a year so that he could make a film of his own countering it. And when it was clear that he would not be able to finish this film in time, he got Chandler accepted as a speaker, or let's just say Chandler was accepted as a speaker. I'm not sure how that came about, but he became a speaker giving the same position as Jenkins. So he kind of filled in for the fact that the film wasn't finished. But things even actually went past that. The group agreed to show Massimo Mizzucco's film, September 11th, New Pearl Harbor, at the 2014 festival, and Jenkins offered to trim parts of the film to make it fit the schedule that they had. But he left the impression that with Mizuko that he would trim here and there to make it fit. And in fact, what he did was he cut the entire Pentagon section out of the film. And he even sold copies of the film without the Pentagon section and referred to it as the science-safe version. So what Jenkins, Chandler, and the rest of the group are trying to do is to create the false impression that there is momentum behind their position and that more and more scholars and scientists are coming around to agree with them. They are also saying that the divisions in the movement over the Pentagon, which I think they bear much of the responsibility for, can be overcome by the movement coming to their point of view. Their contentions are not only misleading, but they are deliberately deceptive, I believe. The claim that the movement is converging on the plain impact position is completely false, since the small number who hold the position have held it for years, and any momentum that they refer to is entirely invented. So those are my initial remarks. If anybody wants to comment or ask any questions, then...
I have a question, too.
This is Lynn Bradbury.
Paul Zaremska.
Oh, okay, let's up. Who was it that asked before, Paul? Who was the first person, the woman?
Jay Schlesinger.
The woman? Who was the woman there? Yeah, who was the woman
there?
Lynn, okay. And then Paul, and then what, David? Is that Dave asking?
Jay Schlesinger, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And who else?
Well, Dick, if I'm still on the call, that is.
Dick? Okay.
Jim
Hufford. James, and who else? Okay.
Maybe let Dick go first, because he's got to leave.
Oh, I didn't hear that. Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Dick. Thank you. Thank you, Lynn.
Okay, I just want to thank Craig for that. That's just like a couple of things that Barbara has sent out. It kind of drops your jaw. I wasn't aware of the politics over Mizuko's film and the deletions. I think that's absolutely fascinating. And I'm sort of flabbergasted by this kind of crap going on. So anyway, thanks a lot for that report. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, thanks for joining us. Lynn, you next?
I'd like to ask, was Behind the Smoke Curtain actually shown this year?
Yes.
Oh, it
was.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was going to be shown in 2014. But
right. And that was a whole horrible story that she told me that she should tell everybody sometime. But that's great that it was shown. I didn't get that impression. I knew it was supposed to be.
It's not a coincidence, in my opinion, that it was shown. The group has come out with a... is about to come out with a paper going after her, within a month of each other. I don't think
did Chandler speak after the movie was shown?
I believe it was shortly after, but actually now that you mention it, I'm not 100% sure. It was all in the one day.
Yeah.
I can't remember which one.
Has the Gang of Seven's paper attacking Barbara's film been published yet?
Not to my knowledge. I have not seen any reference to it. I just know Chandler actually sent a note to the group, California group, 2 days after my article came out, October 19th. October 3rd was Chandler's article. So 2 days after that, he sent a note to the group saying that they would be releasing this paper soon. So.
Craig, I'm having a lot of trouble hearing you. I don't know if others are too, but it seems like you're breaking out very badly. Is there anything else you can do with your...
I'll try. Is that better?
Yes, that's much better. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Do I need to repeat any of that?
please. Yes, please repeat it. I don't think people can hear that.
Yeah, okay. So what I basically said was that Chandler had written to the Northern California group a couple of days after my article came out on October the 3rd, and it was in that note that he mentioned that this paper would be coming out soon. So I haven't heard about it actually coming out, but I imagine it will fairly soon.
Let us know if you see it first.
Yeah, I will do. I also noticed from the from his little note that he had read my article because he took a little shot at it. But because I had made a comment in my article about how the group uses the word science a lot, implying that they do this deliberately. And he said in his little note to the group, he says, "We use the word truth a lot." So that was his little shot. I got a kick out of it.
Okay, was that Paul just speaking?
No, that's, I haven't said anything.
Okay,
that was a good one.
Who was asking the question?
That was probably Dick that's over here.
Oh, okay. All right, so before we get a Paul turn, who's just joining Paul, please?
Yeah, this was Dwayne. I dropped out and I came back.
Oh, okay. Welcome back, Dwayne. All right, Paul, are you next?
Okay, Craig, I want to ask something. When I hear Richard Gage talk, he always prefaces, at least he used to, always prefaces talk also about the scientific method.
Right.
And he's trying to juxtapose the scientific method against basically the non, the people who are accepting the official story. It seems, now you tell me where I don't get it, but Chandler and Jenkins are doing the same thing, but inside the movement rather than. But it's just, I think it's kind of parallel, isn't it? If so, if it's parallel, then there's something wrong. I mean, there's something that's not being grasped here, and it's not really the issue of science. It's something else, or the way in which they use the word science is quite distinct from the way Gage does it. I don't have my own mind clear on this, so that's why I'm asking you.
Well, whenever I hear Richard Gage speak, I never get the feeling that I'm being manipulated. If he mentions the scientific method, I think that's because he looks at the destruction of the towers from a scientific point of view. From an engineering architectural point of view. With the people that I'm talking about, I mean, they would argue the same thing, I think. But I just feel that they're using it as, kind of, and the way I described it in my article is that it's kind of like the way a political party uses a talking point, that they want to create an impression that this is, by the use of a certain term, and I get the feeling that what they're doing is they keep repeating about science and scholarly papers and scientific papers as a way of saying that people on the other side of the issue are the ones not representing science. It's like, it's a manipulation, in my opinion. So I don't have any problem with the scientific method, of course, but my feeling is that they're doing more claiming, they're making more of a point of talking about it than they are of actually using it, in my opinion. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Yeah, that kind of answers my question. I just think maybe we need to make that a little bit clearer. I mean, it's not science per se. It's not just, it's the manipulation that's the issue, I guess.
Right. Yeah, I just meant that they use the term frequently as a way of manipulating. Yeah.
Okay. Dave, you're next.
Yes, I largely agree with Craig because I think that no plane hit the Pentagon, but I always add that because I'm not really a researcher, I'm a networker, my opinion and $2 will buy you a cup of coffee. I also want to support Craig in that largely the group that says that no plane hit the Pentagon, that a plane did hit the Pentagon, is not growing, at least significantly. There is an exception that's important, and that's my dear friend Wayne Costi, who was actually thrown off the board of AAU while he was the only engineer on the board, partly because the group he had founded, 9/11 Truth Outreach, was willing to discuss the Pentagon. He thought that he might take the position that no plane hit the Pentagon, but after extensive research, he sided with these folks. So it's not that there is no growth, but it's not a significant growth.
In addition, my friend Dr. Tim Eastman, who is part of Scientists for 9/11 Truth, he's a PhD in physics, just recently retired from NASA, he says no plane hit the Pentagon. So it's not fair to say that they're the only scientists who take that position. And you can raise Dr. Eastman's position the next time you need to. I can't completely fault them for saying they're the scientific approach because, you know, we just say, well, we are too, you know. I mean, it's not like they're calling us really nasty names. And my biggest concern is that many of these people have done such excellent work on New York that it's important that we not destroy our relationships with them. I can't fault Craig or others for disagreeing with them if they do disagree with them, and I can't fault the movement for discussing the Pentagon, although I lament that the movement is 99% research and 1% outreach, and I think we're going to lose because of that reality. And maybe it's only 95% research, 5% outreach, but it's too little outreach. But after 14 years, you can't fault people for discussing what happened at the Pentagon. I just don't want the bad feeling to be any worse than it has to be. Over.
Right.
Okay. All right. And James, you're the last one.
Okay, well.
Wait a minute. What's that horrible roaring noise? Does someone have a mic
in
the windstream?
Yeah, what is that? Sounds like a wind tunnel or something.
This is Dwayne. I can speak to that. I'm looking over the ocean coming in here on the west coast I talk, and I lost contact, so I didn't get around to hitting star 6 again. I came back online. But I have a beautiful scene. Hope everyone appreciates that.
Yeah. Enjoy it vicariously.
Okay, James, go ahead, please.
Okay, well, Craig, I probably could
Dwayne, if you could star 6, it would be helpful to the rest of us so we don't hear that background, okay? Thank you. All right, go ahead, Dave.
Okay. I probably should know this, but I don't. Ken Jenkins have state an earlier position that he has changed from? And if so, what would be your own theory as to why he has changed his position?
Well, to my knowledge, I'm not aware of him having the opposite opinion at any point. I know, certainly I'm aware of him holding his current opinion at least going back as far back as 2011 when this topic was a pretty hot one. Because 2011 was when Richard Gage released his statement. It's also when Chandler and Cole released their joint statement. So anytime I've heard Ken, and I even... I was even on the Kevin Barrett show with him one time where we both talked about the Pentagon. And I even raised that then. I just barely knew who he was, but I even made the point on that show that it seems like that the people on your side seem to always mention science almost as if they want to imply that they're the only ones who are using science. And he was very nice. He said, no, not at all, but... it was apparent to me even back then, but I'm not aware of his view changing.
Well, I think part of the reason that that's interesting is that unless it's just my impression, Ken Jenkins is pretty closely identified with David Ray Griffin and kind of his circle, and I would hope that that wouldn't signal a change in the inner circles. In Griffin's own view or something like that, because Griffin's view has strongly confirmed that there was no plane that hit the Pentagon.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Griffin, because I remember being very alarmed in 2011 when he basically wrote that Pentagon chapter where he put so much attention on Chandler and Cole and Legg, and he did the same thing in his presentation in Toronto at the Toronto hearing. I couldn't believe the whole talk was almost all, you know, Chandler said this, and Legg said this, and Cole said this. But the only kind of saving grace out of that was that he, in his chapter, he basically refuted all of what they had said.
Yeah.
So while I would criticize him for giving them too much attention, I would praise him for at least reaching what I believe is a reasonable and correct conclusion. So Jenkins clearly disagrees with Griffin, and the group as well. I should mention that this group has kind of suggested that they're either trying to push Griffin, or they're trying to create this idea that Griffin is moving towards their position. And I've heard that in a couple of their papers, and in a couple of them on various shows. And I think that's wrong. I don't think there's any reason to think that. So yeah.
Well, for what it's worth, I tried to get Griffin to Skype with my 9/11 Truth group, and he begged off. He says that he's no longer involved with 9/11 Truth except with his own group,
the consensus panel,
yeah. Otherwise, he says that he's leaving that to others, and he was involved heavily earlier to get the movement going, and now he feels that it's going pretty well and doesn't need him anymore. That's what he told me. So he begged off. Which I thought was interesting, disappointing, but interesting.
I guess he's moved on to the climate change issue. So.
Well, maybe. I don't know if that, maybe that was just a stopping point for him, too. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I've been promoting him with the climate change.
Yeah. Then I'd like to say that you mentioned outreach. My own outreach is basically writing the articles on the website that I maintain, 911grassroots.org, where we have 4,000 visits a month from everywhere, from around the world, and I'm sure that not all of those by far are staunch 9/11 truthers, so I think that's an outreach.
Okay.
I treat it as such.
Right. Thank you, James. Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of our stack here. So, Craig, thanks for continuing to pursue this, and it's certainly an issue that we'll probably be visiting again in the near future, in one way, shape, or form. So, we trust that you'll be one of the people keeping up the rest of the development.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. And lastly, but not hopefully weekly, I want to give a very, very, very brief summary of a book that I recently read up on last week, called The Hidden History, an Exposé of Modern Crimes, Conspiracies, and Cover-Ups in American Politics by Donald Jeffries. Overall, I think this is a book that I can highly recommend to everybody on this call who's interested in expanding their knowledge of conspiracies in American life. What makes the book unique, I think, is that it's basically marking off by presidential administration since Kennedy the number of politically motivated killings and suspicious disappearances, and sort of giving what he calls the body count per administration, which is fascinating. You see that there is definitely a pattern there
It doesn't just include the Clintons and the Bushes, but it actually includes some of the others as well, certainly Obama. And that in itself makes the book interesting. He treats 9/11 in passing in a very straightforward, false flag operation kind of way, and therefore it can be recommended Neil Obstat. There's nothing in it that will challenge the 9/11 truther in any kind of way, shape, or form. My only criticism of the book is that he claims in the beginning that no one will ever be able to recognize his politics, that he's above the political thing, he's just exposing his history as a historian. But the fact is that it becomes very clear in the course of the book that he's a Kennedyite. I mean, he basically is one of these people that believes Kennedys are, the answer to America and basically can't do much wrong. And this shows up in a kind of a sad way when he treats the question of Eugene McCarthy, where he sort of downplays his role and upplays Robert F. Kennedy's role in galvanizing the anti-war movement politically in a political direction. And I really just couldn't believe that he did that, because I was, alive and well during that time, very politically aware, and I know the truth. And that wasn't it. But, I got to give him that. I got to forgive him that, because he does so well in the rest of the book in bringing us evidence and documentation that prove conclusively that these various presidential administrations are up to their teeth and skeletons in their closets. The one other thing I wanted to mention was the RFK assassination. If you're in any way unfamiliar with that, this is definitely the book for you, because I think he spends what some people would consider an inordinate amount of time covering the forensics of the RFK assassination. But it is very, very, very convincing if you are unfamiliar with those details, that it definitely conclusively demonstrates that there was more than one gunman, and that there was a clear cover-up on the part of the police and the FBI from the get-go. So I would urge you, if you want to fill in that part of your history, historical knowledge, to pick the book up and read it cover to cover, because it is really a good history.
Yeah. Okay. Could you repeat the title of the book and the author again, please, Ken?
The title of the book is Hidden History, and the subtitle is An Exposé of Modern Crimes, Conspiracies, and Cover-Ups in American Politics.
Yeah. And I'd like to say that I got the book after you recommended it last Monday, and I'm having a lot of fun reading it. So.
Yeah, it's a good book. It's up our alley. It's the kind of book that we tend to read.
how do you spell Jeffries?
Jeffries.
Right. And first name?
Donald.
Donald Jeffries. Good.
And while I have the floor, I just wanted to throw one other thing in here. I've become familiar recently with a journalist by the name of Mark Journalist. I don't know if any of the others are familiar with him. But definitely, if you have time, meander on over to his website. It's called darkjournalist.org, I believe, or .com, I'm not sure which. And he does intense interviews with some very remarkable people, almost invariably from a deep state perspective. Okay. I don't know that he does anything on 9/11 per se, but I noticed that he did do an interview with Jim Mars that did definitely deal with 9/11, so I'm sure that he's pretty hip to that. He is definitely a class A journalist and somebody that we definitely want to be familiar with, because his work is outstanding. So his name, again, is Dark Journalist. That's his trade name, and he's quite a student. Okay, unless anybody has any comments or questions about the book, I think we're ready to move on to announcements. Does anyone have any?
Dave, go ahead.
Yeah,
I've been in dialogue with the King Center in Atlanta because I was there in May, and they have made no mention of the Memphis civil trial, which Mr. Pepper represented the family, and they have promised to explain their position to me. I got a partial explanation when I was on the road and couldn't hear, and they actually have the three surviving children really actually are deciding not to put it there. But hopefully I'll be able to be in dialogue with them. I think it's very unfortunate that that is their position. It's on their website, but it's not in Atlanta. I bet a million people have passed through the Atlanta Center without having a chance to see about the Memphis case.
I'm sorry, what's their position again, Dave? Could you clarify that again?
Their position is they're not going to mention it. My position is they should mention it.
They're not going to mention it.
The Memphis case,
which is
a jury trial decided after an hour that James Earl Ray did not kill Dr. King and that it was a U.S. government conspiracy.
The historic case. Okay, I got you. Thank you.
So you mean they keep the transcripts on the website, but they don't want to say anything about it in person, or what does that mean?
I'm very upset. Who else is interested in this problem so I can be in touch with you?
Oh, I'm Dick Attlee. I have a web page up on that whole thing and a summary of his book and an outline of it.
Anybody else?
Yeah. And Barry Zwicker here. I did two videos that have been seen quite a bit on that whole case, and specifically the Memphis civil trial. So I'm interested in anything you have. Anybody else?
Paul Zaremka also.
Great. Who's that?
Lynn, I'm interested as well. Okay. That wasn't even really reported, the results of that case.
Right. That's right.
In mainstream news.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, Craig McKee.
This is and Dwayne Dietz.
And Paul Zaremka.
Right. Gotcha.
Yeah, Dave, if you get in contact with that family, if they do give you a position, I hope you'll make a point to share it with us as an item on the agenda.
I like to think that they're going to tell me before next. Are we going to meet before January?
Oh, sure. We meet every last Wednesday.
Except that it's Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Let's see. Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. That is probably an item that we should be reviewing here. We should look closely at how that's going to intersect with our upcoming holiday calendar.
Well, the 30th is not Christmas Day or anything. December 30th is too
December 30th, that should not be an issue. But what about the November one? Is it the Wednesday before? Yeah, is it the Wednesday before Thanksgiving? Do people think that will be a problem?
Why not do
it
on
Tuesday? Before Thanksgiving?
Why not do it on Tuesday, for instance, or Monday? Monday or Tuesday.
Okay. Here's one reason for me is because I'll be traveling. Let's see. I could probably do it from the train. If I can't do it, well, I suppose Craig or somebody else can do it. How do people feel about changing the date? Well, how about the Sunday? How about the Sunday before? Would people feel comfortable doing it on a Sunday evening?
22nd.
Sure.
The 22nd, yeah.
That's a good, November 22nd, that's a good day to meet.
There we go. Good day for conspiracy theorists to have a powwow. Okay. All right. Well, that's fine. Then we'll have to make it a point to get that word out, Craig, right? Let people know that will be our next meeting, our November meeting date, because of the holiday conflict. U.S. holiday conflict, I should say. And we'll do that, and then we'll keep with our December schedule, and that shouldn't be an issue.
Okay, so 8 p.m. Eastern time on the 22nd.
Yep.
Okay, great.
All right, any other announcements? Thanks for bringing that up, Dave. I meant to do that myself.
Dwayne Dietz is on the stack.
Go ahead, Dwayne.
Michael Meacher, member of British Parliament, also an honorary member of 9/11 Consensus Panel. Died recently And some feel it may be a suspicious reason, because he was pursuing things pretty strongly that would be uncovering some 9/11 issues. So
we need to be aware of that. Is he the one who denied entry to Canada?
No, that was a different
Galloway.
Galloway. Who was it?
Wasn't it Galloway?
Galloway.
Yeah, it was Galloway, yeah. George Galloway was denied entry to Canada for a while.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for that update. If anybody hears any more about the details of his death, that certainly would be subject matter for a teleconference, so please keep us informed.
Could I ask Craig and Barry a question?
Go ahead, this is Craig.
Okay, I'd just like to ask if you think the change of administrations in Canada has any portent for 9/11 truth.
Well, Barry here, that's a very good question. And my shortest possible answer, I thought about it a bit and keep up very much with Canadian politics, is regrettably, I doubt it. The new Liberal government, it's a whole lot better than the former extreme right-wing Harper government,
yeah.
But it's still part of the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
And so one can hope, but, you know, it's a slim hope. That's my view anyway. What do you think, Craig?
I couldn't have said it better. I would say exactly the same thing. It's in many sort of superficial ways, it's a much more open, you know, it's a breath of fresh air in a lot of ways, but he definitely is part of the establishment, and nothing fundamental is going to change in that area.
Well, how about the move toward the national security state?
Well, there's a small improvement there, I'd say. There were three bills passed by Harper, and they will be reexamined by a proper parliamentary committee, but then again, the outcome will be unknown. It's a step in the right direction. This new government is taking several steps in the right direction, and that's one of them. But too early to say what the outcomes will be.
Yeah, Trudeau has said he will make changes to the recent bill that was passed, Bill C-51. They will remove certain elements of it or change certain elements of it. The ones that people are objecting to the most, but but again, yeah, like Barry said, we'll see what happens, whether it actually happens or not.
Well, whether you think it's going to mean a whole lot or not, I would suggest that even if it's, you know, sort of a shot in the dark, that you two guys consider petitioning the government on behalf of 9/11 Truth and or informing them or whatever, the new government.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a good suggestion. We should gird our loins and have courage and take steps to try to get 9/11 truth more visible in this country at the parliamentary level. Good.
Yeah. Great.
Okay. Any other announcements? All right, then. It sounds like our next meeting then will be the 22nd of November, a Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. See y'all then. Happy, and have a good evening.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye, all.